events unfolding in Europe, we hear all the time the incessant drumbeat. I'm in Britain, but across Europe, this incessant drumbeat of kinetic war with Russia, be it, you know, whenever it happens in 2030 or whatever, this idea that we have to prepare for, you know, that there are soldiers that appear behind podiums to insist that the nations have to prepare for war. The politicians are making the same noises. You've got these incredibly unpopular leaders across Europe, Keir Starmer in Britain, Emmanuel Macron in France, Chancellor Merz in Germany, Ursula von der Leyen, the president of the EU, all making these belligerent noises. I wonder what you make of that, because, you know, if you think you might have a leader who's slipping away from rationality and cognition, then a lot of us here in Europe absolutely feel that about an incipient madness amongst our leadership, pushing for a war with Russia that nobody else seems to want, just them.
Yeah, that is such an important point here. And there does seem to be a group psychosis, if I can use that term, that is just disconnected from reality, any way you want to look at it. Look, Russia has been at war for, close to 4.5 years now, or 4+ years, 4.25, something like that, well into the fifth year here, against one country on their border. Now, to be fair, this country of Ukraine has 50 nations supporting it. So it's not just one country against another. It has been huge allied support with all kinds of support, intelligence, training, physical equipment, all kinds of things. So it's not, it's bigger than just one country against another. But still, it is geographically one country. And we have seen for the last nearly 3 years, it's certainly 2.5 full years, where the Russian side has been on the offensive. And we have seen that in the last 2 years, they've barely taken like 1 or 2% of additional territory. The Russians have suffered significant casualties. They have inflicted profound casualties, certainly in reality, much more on the Ukrainian side. God only knows what the real numbers are on both sides. It's gaudy, no matter what the real number is. We'll find out one day, and it's ugly no matter what the real number is. But you see that Russia has now, over the last 3 months, significantly slowed down what they have been able to do. And they have, President Putin has been, is very risk averse. And from some of my sources inside of Russia, there's growing anger. And I'm talking about at the troop level, because Putin won't do anything more. He won't take any risks. And so they just do this slow grind thing that has no apparent end. I mean, how long it could go? There's literally millions more people, men in Ukraine, that they could feed into this meat grinder. It's a miracle to me that they keep finding enough to offset the losses and to only have a little bit of setbacks here and there. And they can periodically have things like in the Kursk, in the Kherson area, counterattacks that they have done recently in the middle part of the Eastern Front. They're always rolled back because they don't have the power to sustain them. The Russians also never make any major breakthroughs. Now, my personal belief is that militarily the Russians can do something. There's a lot of targets they've never attacked. There's a lot of tactics they haven't tried. I don't understand why they haven't. I thought they should have done something. I thought they were going to do something a couple of years ago and many times in between, but they never have even tried. And so that's getting anger on the Russian side. But the bottom line is they're not going any further. So what possible logic can the NATO in its entirety and the all 32 members make the argument that Russia, which can't even break all the Donbass, just the Donbass they haven't been able to get in 4.5+ years of war, that somehow in a few years they're going to put at risk the entire NATO countries? I mean, that's absurd at face value. They don't physically have the ability. The Achilles heel, and this even theoretical that Russia would move on the West, is the logistics. Yes, Russia has the Oreshnik and a number of other hypersonics, and there is no question that they can mete out all kinds of long-range damage. They can blow stuff up from all the way up to the English Channel if they wanted to. But they can't move their military down. So just launching missiles with no ground operation, as we're demonstrating in Iran, is, yeah, you can blow all kinds of stuff up, and then what? Now, Putin's risk-averse, and he's definitely not stupid, so he's not just going to throw a bunch of missiles out for no gain unless he's ready to follow it up on the ground. But logistically, they can go, their system systemically is designed to go maybe 180, I think it's 180 kilometers beyond where their rail lines in. They have a system that needs rail lines to be able to project power. And you're seeing the limits of that even in Ukraine by itself. And so there is literally physically no chance that they can launch a, you know, a Nazi top invasion and roll across Europe like the Germans did in 1939 and 1940. Because they don't have the capacity to do it. So it doesn't even matter if Putin has some wild ambition to want to conquer everybody, and there's no evidence he does. There is a lot of evidence he doesn't. But that reality seems to be lost on so many in Europe. And you mentioned a bunch of European leaders, and you can add Kaja Kallas to that. You can add a lot of the leaders in Poland and several others as well. And it's just irrational. There's no military logic to it. There's no diplomatic logic. There's no economic logic. It's not like Russia has ever been this, I just want to conquer people, like the Germans did, like the French tried when they invaded, under Napoleon into Russia. They've several times attacked into Russia, but the only time Russia came into Europe, of course, was to destroy the Nazis after they had been invaded, et cetera. So even historically, there's no kind of driving territorial opposition. It's just that the Europeans want to apply to Russia a mentality that was European, that wanted to go east, not west, or not the Easterners that wanted to come west. And so it's kind of mirror imposing our mentality on the other side and being afraid of it. And my God, we have to be ready. But they just can't do it. So it's kind of a long-winded answer, I guess. But I think
obviously, I don't think anybody imagines for a moment that the European countries individually or collectively could threaten Russia. You know, if Russia has demonstrated anything in the years of the Ukraine war, it's that they are the immovable object. You know, they aren't a moving force advancing into Europe at all. They're not that, but they are the immovable object. And the fact that, you know, countries like France and Britain would make saber rattling noises about taking them on seems to most civilian observers absolutely insane. I wonder at the extent to which it actually feels as though the peoples in plural in Europe, you know, would have to contemplate overthrow of these regimes of ours that are pushing for wars, for political gains, that none of the civilian populations have any truck with, have any desire for. You know, that government is best that governs least, you know, is a line that comes out of your side of the Atlantic. And, right. And but on the contrary, what we've got are these, you know, politically obsessed regimes here in Europe that just want to foment, murderous war against a non-threatening Russia. And it feels as if the peoples of Europe must drift inexorably towards overthrow of these needlessly belligerent regimes of our own.
Well, listen, even on my show just yesterday, Colonel McGregor, as you pointed out, he believes that is going to happen. He believes that most of the governments that are in power right now will be voted out of office just in the coming years because these policies are bankrupting them. And enough people see, just like you do, that there's no, and I'm coming at it from a military perspective to reinforce your observations as a civilian. Yes, it is absurd. There is no physical threat from the Russian side. And when you have spent 4.5 years of helping this one country destroy and kill the soldiers of another country, they're going to retaliate. See, this is one of the things that drives me crazy. Every time Russia does something after we have attacked them, after we have helped Ukraine kill the Russians, we act like, how dare they do whatever they did? You know, I can't believe they're doing this and they're threatening this other kind of stuff. Because when Russia sees, for example, German troops move into the Baltics, they say, hey, if you keep going here, we may do something. Or when NATO itself, prior to all this, in the years prior, kept moving closer and closer to the Russian border in Ukraine, which was different than the Baltics. They didn't like the Baltics, but militarily, that's a solvable problem. But when you're talking about Ukraine, you're talking about a gauntlet that goes points straight to Moscow. And they always said militarily, that's the path that other invading armies from the West had used. And so that is a non-negotiable red line militarily. And that's why they hated the Baltics when the Baltics joined, but it wasn't a red line because militarily that could be pretty easily contained on the ground with geography, but the other one couldn't. So they said, yeah, if you keep pressing in this direction, there's going to be war. Jens Stoltenberg admitted in 2023 that Putin said, if you keep pushing NATO inside Ukraine, there's going to be war. But if you just take it off the table, there won't be war. Jens Stoltenberg mocked that and said, of course we weren't going to sign that. Are you serious? So you could have avoided this whole war by merely acknowledging reality that everybody knew that Ukraine was never going to be invited into NATO, certainly not before this war and definitely not afterwards. And yet, instead of just saying the obvious that now we're not going to do that, instead, we kept the fiction that it was, knowing that that was going to prompt the Russians to war, because he told us that it would. And then he did exactly what he said, because it was an existential threat to them, like it would be. Can you imagine UK if China or Russia was going to ally with, say, France or somebody right across the English Channel? Are you going to be OK with that? Or would we be OK if China or Russia was going to do something with Mexico on our southern border, bring their troops into the country? Of course not. We would react exactly the way Russia did. And I think, and I'm telling you, too many people in Europe knew that. And that was, I think they wanted to spawn this conflict. I don't know what all the reasons were, but it can't be stupidity or blindness. There had to be, because these things are self-evident. So I don't know what their motivation was, but I know it has radically backfired. And I hope that the people of any of these countries start saying, we're going to vote you guys out and we're going to put somebody in power that actually wants to help us and just wants to have, you know, peaceful relations with someone who can't threaten us with an invasion.
Because for all of the reasons that you've just elucidated, why would the regimes of the European nations be pushing incessantly for kinetic war with a Russia that poses them no threat? It's an unspoken ideology out there somewhere that is casting a dark shadow, is what I would say.
Yeah, and I can't identify what those are. I can speculate about some things, but I think intentionally they're in the shadows. And whether that's just as myopia, whether it's just this obsession that, no, this is still 1992 and I have to be on top, or if it's something darker. And unfortunately, I can't identify which of those things it is, and all of them are possible. But that's one of the reasons why the one hope that we have is people power, that they can still, even as powerful as these people are, can be voted out of office.
Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis, I could talk to you for the rest of the day, but I fully understand that you have other commitments and other places to be. But I will, I'll hope that we can have conversations in the weeks and months ahead. But for now,
always my pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Let me know anytime.